We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
The Chicago Bulls select Kobe White.
LaVine with the runway.
Get up or get out the way, Trae Young.
Welcome to Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. We're on the Blue Wire Network. We're brought to you by Indeed and Bet Online. I'm Ricky O'Donnell. I'm here with Jason Pat. Bulls got a new front office, but it's the same old story in free agency. Jason, a week into free agency about. The Bulls have made just one move, agreeing to a one-year, $5 million deal with Garrett Temple that still hasn't been announced. You can go into that in a minute. But mostly, I feel like we've kind of just been in wait-and-see mode. There hasn't been a trade. There hasn't been any big signings. Obviously, the Bulls only had the mid-level exception, which I think is about, what, like $8 or $9 million a year. And then the
biannual
exception, yeah, as well. So it's been a quiet free agent period thus far. How are you feeling about it?
Yeah, so obviously that Garrett Temple deal went down Friday after some initial rush, and then I guess we should bring up that Denzel Valentine, as predicted, rushed. I'm surprised it didn't happen right away, literally right away. Took that qualifying offer, $4.7 million. So he's back. He's got a one-year deal, $4.7 million. He also has the right to veto any trade now because he did that. Again, not unexpected at all. And then I will also point out Adam Akoka back on his two-way deal again. So him and Dotson are another two-way guys. As for the Bulls and their general inactivity, I know this has caused some consternation among fans who, with this new front office, were really hoping for the team to do a bit more. I mean, I pointed this out on another podcast. Well, if you look at a team like the Detroit Pistons, another team like kind of in a rebuild, and they have a new GM with Troy Reaver, and they've just been wheeling and dealing. They've also made some very questionable moves, like Mason Plumlee, and they gave Jeremy Grant a lot of money. However you feel about Jeremy Grant, he's good. I don't know if he's worth 360, but just kind of two very different approaches with the Pistons, who I do think the Bulls are in a better position in terms of like core pieces, but the Pistons, just a lot of moves being made, and the Bulls just kind of biding their time, being patient again. Garrett Temple, a perfectly fine veteran signing, 1 year, $5 million, as you mentioned, and it seems like it's part of the mid-level, but you also did mention how it has not been announced yet, which I am, like, for such a simple deal like that, you would think it would just kind of happen right away, which makes me wonder if maybe there is something else in the works before they announce that deal. Again, we will see about that. But, I mean, Garrett Temple, I think he's 34 years old. He played a lot of minutes for the Nets last year. He had, like, career highs, like, in terms of, like, his counting stats, but it was because of his minutes. This will be his 10th team. It's like a 34% three-point shooter for his career. On the floor, you'll basically get just like a veteran, decent, like kind of 3-and-D guy. Like he plays hard defensively. Apparently great in the locker room. I know we talked about this with Thad Young last offseason. We thought Thad Young would be a great locker room guy. It sounds like Garrett Temple is like legitimately a great locker room guy. Bradley Beal called him like his favorite teammate ever. A lot of other young guys have really liked him. He's one of the vice presidents of the National Basketball Players Association. So like legit veteran guy here, but I mean, whatever. 1 year, $5 million for a 34-year-old wing who just gets some wing depth. I mean, that's obviously not super exciting. So in terms of, like, am I antsy? Kind of, a little bit. Like, I think I expected maybe a little more. I would like to see a little more happen for sure. did I really expect anything huge to happen this offseason? I feel like leading up to this, I really was never expecting like really a trade of the core. I know we talked about how anything should be on the table. Nobody's untouchable. But when it came down to it, like it would not have surprised me to see like basically what they're doing right now is kind of a wait and see. Like, and if they, assuming that they don't make a big trade of a core piece and whatever, Zach LaVine, Coby White, Wendell Carter Jr., Lauri Markkanen are all back, that wouldn't surprise me. Just kind of see what they have under a new competent head coach in Billy Donovan, and then kind of going from there. And if obviously if it went to shit next this upcoming season, then you better make some moves. But I would also like to see, I'll let you answer here really quick and give your take as well. I would like to see more, obviously, with the end of the roster, basically non-core guys. We can talk about that in a bit. But Ricky, is this bothering you that they are basically not doing anything?
Yeah, well, I think like the first thing you need to do is sort of acknowledge, like, you know, so the young core of the previous front office, which is obviously Coby White, Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, Wendell Carter. I felt like the Garpacks mindset was like, we're going to acquire these young pieces. We're going to be patient. They're going to grow together, and hopefully they can grow into something great. So after watching this core for the last couple of years, like, Jason, do you think that if the Bulls just let that, you know, that young core grow, now add Patrick Williams to it, that one day it will be something great? Do you think that will be the case?
Do I think like this group, like entirely together, will be the case? Yeah. I don't think so.
No,
I think we've
talked about it. Of course not. Anyone who watched in the last couple of years should know that, you know, they just don't have enough juice. They don't have enough upside. They don't have enough star power. And Garpacks, perhaps geniusly, also fucking handcuffed themselves by hiring the worst head coach in the NBA. So now when the new front office is evaluating the young core, it's like, well, let's see them when they don't have the worst head coach in the NBA. But like, why did they ever have the worst head coach in the NBA? They didn't have to. Just because Paxson and Boylan are both MAGA guys. No, I don't know. But it's ridiculous that the Bulls are in this situation, right? That you still have all these pieces we've seen for the last couple of years, and no one feels like they can be adequately judged because they were handcuffed by such poor head coaching. So if that is the new front office, Karnišovas and Eversley, if that is their philosophy, where we're going to go into this new season, we're going to see what Markkanen looks like with Billy Donovan. We're going to see what Carter looks like with Billy Donovan. We're going to try to establish, like, you know, a style of play that we want to play. We're going to try to figure out an identity as a team, which has really been lacking from the Bulls since the last time they were any good. So, like, I think that, you know, there's a sense where that all makes, there's, you know, there's a, it, that does make sense in, it's in some way. But it's also like you're kind of running out of time. Like, yes, you don't want to deal Markkanen now when you think like perhaps his value could be higher.
Yeah.
It could also be lower a year from now because his rookie extension will be up. He's going to need to be re-signed. So you got to figure that out. Also, if Markkanen has another bad year like he did last year, you got to think like some of that like young player promise is going to start to wear off, right? And eventually he'll just be like kind of a guy who's been in the league for four years and hasn't gotten any better and hasn't shown any real upside. So I think you have to be careful of that, too. And, like, mostly I just think that this core is going to need to be shaken up. I think that Karnišovas was hired to shake up the core because Paxson and Foreman were not capable of doing it, right? Like, Paxson and Foreman never made any big trades. The only time they ever made a trade was basically to dump salary. So now, like, some tough decisions have to be made. So I'm not going to sit here on this podcast and be like, the Bulls have to move Lauri Markkanen. The Bulls have to trade Zach LaVine. But what I do think is that there's going to come a point where you have to make some sort of decision. You need to maximize the value on each of those pieces. Now, I'm not really like upset that they haven't done anything yet, but I do think the clock is ticking.
Yeah, for sure.
Because, you know, these guys only, like LaVine, if you go to trade LaVine next offseason, okay, now he's only under contract for 1 year. Does that make him more more likely to be desired by another team or less likely? So I don't know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of questions up in the air here. And the first thing that I think that you need to acknowledge, though, is that Coby White, Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, and Wendell Carter as a core is not good enough. So, you know, that's going to need to be improved one way or another. What I have been seeing throughout the league since free agency started, There's two ways of going about doing it. So you could look at the Hawks, and the Hawks are just signing everyone. The Hawks signed Gallinari. The Hawks signed Bogdanović. The Hawks signed Chris Dunn.
Rondo.
The Hawks signed Rondo. And that was in addition to this young, drafted, homegrown core they had before that, right? They had DeAndre Hunter, Cam Reddish, Kevin Huerter, John Collins. They just drafted Okongwu. It's like they almost have like two full teams at this point now of like veteran guys and young guys to potentially put around Trae Young. So that's one way you could do it. And then the other way you could do it is how the Thunder and the Pelicans have taken their approach this offseason, which is basically we have assets that are valuable league-wide. When other teams are desperate, we are going to just drain them on trade value, and we're going to win those trades based on value. So like you look at everything that went back to the Pelicans for the Drew Holiday deal to Milwaukee. You look at all the trades that OKC has made, basically getting like 12 first round picks or whatever it's been.
Ridiculous.
So part of me is now at the point where I'm like, man, like maybe it would be good if there's a desperate team that really wants Zach. Like, yeah, give me two first round picks and two pick swaps. You know what I mean? Like, a trade like that, to me, would be really welcomed, even if it's going to weaken the on-court product this year, because then at least the franchise would have a little bit of direction. And, like, you know, you can just take those picks and you can trade them, which the last front office never did. Like, if there was a fire sale for the Bulls and they were trading LaVine, they were trading Markkanen, all right, and let's say you get three or four first-round picks. Like, that doesn't mean you need to hold onto them forever and use them yourself. You can also move them the next time a superstar becomes available, and there's guys available every single offseason. Right now, we're in a situation where James Harden's basically available. So there's a lot of different routes you can take to do this. I think that they don't really have all that much time. I think that, like, they better make some moves by the trade deadline, because a piece like Otto Porter could be really valuable league-wide, I think. But he's only going to have a single year left on his contract. I don't know what his protections are in terms of when he can be traded. It's probably December or, you know, like a little bit into the season or whatever. But they should definitely...
I'm pretty sure he could be traded whenever.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
Sweet then. They should be looking to move him. Felicio, he's only on the roster as a trade chip. And so be looking to move him. Thad Young.
I mean, you could just cut Felicio.
Right.
Cut Felicio. Well, I think you could stretch his contract, but whatever.
Don't stretch him. That would be the worst thing you could do. Then he's on the books for five more years.
It's only three more years. It'd be like 3 years, like $3 million a year. If it like came down to it and like you could get someone else with that roster spot, I would do it. Obviously, that is a last resort type deal. I just don't want him on this damn roster.
Well, you could also use him in a trade, right? Like just to match.
Right. Yeah. Obviously, you certainly could. I just feel like, I don't know how you're going to use him in a trade because he's just awful. I don't know. But yeah.
It would have to
in general, though, I agree that like the rest of this roster, like if you're not going to trade a core guy, and I you mentioned like the Zach, like possibly trading Zach for like a haul. I'm sure they are asking for a haul. Like I am very curious how other teams around the league view these guys. Like, because like individually, like you look at him and it's like Zach LaVine, we obviously have talked him up a bit. Like he's a good scorer and all that. He's the Bulls' best player. Like they should be asking for a lot. But like, what is a contender willing to give a Zach LaVine? I don't know. I guess Drew Holiday just got a ridiculous haul, so maybe they could, like a desperate team could. But maybe that does happen closer to the trade deadline. I don't know. And then, like you mentioned, how Lowry and Wendell, like their values aren't that high right now. Like the Bulls, it almost does feel like they are trying to like thread a needle where like all these guys, a bunch of these guys, like their value isn't that high because they had a doofus head coach, or like Zach LaVine, like his value might be high right now, but they might value him like too much. So it's just kind of in like a weird spot. And you also mentioned the Hawks as like a thing, like maybe they think the Bulls think like they could be the Hawks like next off season when they have like after a better season and they have a better idea of which core guys they want when they have more cap space and all that. Like, I'm not a big fan of like hoarding the cap space for like, I don't think they're going to get any like superstar free agents, but I mean, they could add some like nice players around the core that like the Hawks did. The Hawks haven't really added superstars, but they've added some nice players with the cap space that they did have. So like, maybe that's the route they plan on taking, is kind of just like playing the cap space game, but like not necessarily for superstars. Because again, I don't even know which superstars are actually going to be available next offseason. We'll see, but the Bulls could have some decent amount of cap space. It is just kind of a weird spot. So like, that's why I'm like not upset yet, kind of like you, but once you do see like the season starts in a month, like once you get like a month or two in and you kind of see where this thing might be going, they definitely should be ready to pivot and make some big moves. I guess, because if they're just kind of standing pat throughout this year too, like, I wonder, like, I feel like the worst thing could happen is if they're kind of competing for, like, a spot in the play-in, but they, like, think they're totally fine. I guess that wouldn't be the worst, because then maybe they're able to add some guys next offseason, but it is kind of a weird spot that they're in right now, and I don't know. I do understand why people are antsy. You get a new front office in after watching crap, like Garpax, what they've done lately, and for, like, nothing to happen again. I do understand it. I have been trying to preach the patience thing, but the patience only lasts so long. I think there should be patience for right now, but I also do think they should be looking to do more this offseason.
I just really hope that the ownership isn't like, hey, let's just give it a year, see what they have in terms of like Kobe, Levine, Markkanen. Like, I really hope that there's no pressure from ownership to do that, because, like, you look at Daryl Morey, who comes into the Sixers, and he's immediately just, like, making a bunch of trades. And they might be trades that the Sixers are losing on straight value, but it's going to help the fit of the team, right?
Oh, like, much better.
And Morey, you know, explains it perfectly in all his press conferences about, you know, the gravity that Seth Curry has as a shooter. And you're just like, yeah, like, Morey gets it. And he's going to be able to come in, identify the problem, identify the solution, make the deal. Okay, Karnišovas, can you identify the problem for us? First of all, like, let's see you do that, then figure out the solution. But of course, like, you know, they do have some time. So I'm not super antsy, but the current state of the team is exactly like you said. They are not as bad as, like, the Wizards, the Cavs, the Knicks.
The Pistons are going to be awful.
And that's just in the conference.
Yeah.
But then in terms of the playoffs, like, they're competing with, I guess, in you know, there is the 7 and 8 seed make the play-in tournament this year, 9 and 10 seed make the play-in tournament this year. So those four teams, like, I assume they're competing with, like, the Magic, the Hawks.
They'll be like the Magic, Hawks, Wizards, I think, will be there with Wall possibly back, even though maybe he'll get traded. I don't know. But, I mean, the Wizards, I think, will be right there. The Wizards and the Bulls had, like, the same record this past year. So, like, you figure there's, like, 6-7 legit teams. Like, depending on – the Pacers should probably stick around as well. Like, they should be just as good. So, like, probably seven good teams. Then you get to the 8, where it's, like, Hornets, Bulls, Magic, Wizards, Hawks is probably – and then, like, I think Pistons, Cavs, Knicks are probably bringing up the rear there. So, like, there's probably, like, 4 or 5 teams battling for those last, whatever, 4 spots or 3 spots maybe in the East. And, again, the Hawks should be better. Hornets signing Gordon Hayward and getting LaMelo. I mean, that's at least interesting. I don't know how good they'll actually be. Again, the Wizards with, like, Wall back if they don't trade him. In the East, like, to get in the 10 spot, to get in the play-in tournament, like, the Bulls aren't competing for that. That's an absolute, like, joke. And then maybe they'll have a chance at Cade Cunningham. And then everything should blow up. Like, if the Bulls are not competing for that 10th spot, they should get rid of everybody almost. But, I don't know. There's really no excuse not to at least be competing for that spot. I don't know.
Yeah. And then, you know, you mentioned the bottom of the roster, and this is another thing I feel passionately about.
Well, before we talk about bottom of the roster, maybe other moves, let's take a quick break for our word from our sponsors. 2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical. And Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world with more total visits than any other job site, according to ComScore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, and you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. So now, Indeed's new way of matching with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria. Then you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. 73% of online job seekers in the U.S. visiting Indeed each month, according to ComScore total visits. So it's clear that Indeed can help get you the quality hire you need. That's why more than 3 million businesses worldwide use Indeed for hiring. So right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job posts, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. So try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply.
Football is back in full swing, and you might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today. Start off wagering on wins, division championships, and futures all day, every day. Head over to BetOnline and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use the promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word, BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. All right, we're back. I wanted to talk about the end of the roster real quick.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, this team still has four centers with Cornette, Felicio, Gafford, and Wendell Carter.
Yes.
You just don't need four centers.
Correct.
This team also doesn't really have much use for Thad Young at this point. I think that's like the number one guy who you would potentially want to trade.
Yeah.
You can argue it either way. Potentially Thad Young doesn't have as much value as we might think around the league. I still think he could help out the contenders who basically, like, you're going to need depth, especially in this shortened season. I would like to think Thad Young has a little bit of value, but I don't know. Maybe he doesn't. So that's, like, you know, something to think about. And then do we really need Archie Diacono for another year? Like, to me, he doesn't really have any upside. He's fine. Player, I guess.
If he's their 15th man, like, whatever. That's totally fine. I don't know why the Bulls gave him a three-year deal. What was that, last offseason? I think, like, I mean,
just
why?
Just stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's all, actually, I don't know if it's third year is guaranteed, but still, either way, there's no reason to give him that deal. Like, he's fine. He proved that he can play in the NBA a little bit, but, like, you just don't, when you're, like, a rebuilding team like this, like, he's probably a better guy to have as a contender as your 15th man who, like, you can do whatever you could count on if you really need it. But, like, when you're a rebuilding team, like, looking for upside, like you mentioned, like, that just don't use a roster spot in a guy like that. It makes almost no sense. Like, I don't get it. So, yeah. You mentioned, like, those, like, Cornette and Felicio. We talked about Felicio already. Arch Giacchino. I mean, Hutchinson's still there. They're probably not going to give up on him, but, like, I'd be fine giving up on him. We mentioned Denzel. Like, he's there as well, which we were kind of confused about why they gave him his qualifying offer when he just hasn't done anything in the league and he's 27 already. I know they like that he can shoot and pass, but, like, he's played, like, 170 games or something like that in the 4 years, and that's ridiculous. He's always hurt, like, why use a roster spot and $5 million on him? So, like, that, yeah, there's a lot of, like, roster churn that they could still do here. We haven't mentioned Satoransky either. Like, Satoransky is fine as a bench guy, but, like, if you could trade him also, like, get for something, like, I don't care. Like, all these guys, it's just, like, whatever, basically. So, like, I would like to see them kind of move a few of these guys around. In terms of, like, Thad Young, like, would a team like the Nets like him? Like, I don't know. Like, could you trade him for, like, him and something else for Lonzo Ball, something like Lonzo Ball? I don't know. I know in terms of, like, having Garrett Temple coming in, like, and I mentioned how they haven't announced that deal yet. I don't think they have announced it since we started recording here. You wonder, like, oh, maybe they could work something else out for another player in the Nets. Like, maybe they could bring in Spencer Dinwiddie, but I'm assuming the Nets are probably waiting to see what happens with James Harden and that Spencer Dinwiddie would be in a James Harden trade. But, like, theoretically, maybe a guy like Thad Young could be useful on the Nets and you could get somebody from there. I really don't know. And it's just, but they could still, the Bulls could definitely still use some more playmaking. They have too many guys in the front court because even you mentioned the four centers. I mean, you could argue that Lowry should be playing some center as well at times.
Yeah.
I know you've talked about Patrick Williams as a possible, like, small ball five at times. They just have too many damn big men and just, like, useless guys there. And they need more help on the wing and the backcourt, whatever you want to call it. Like, they need to make some moves here on the outside. Is there anybody, like, anybody left, like, any trades that you, like, would like to make them see? Like, I mentioned Lonzo, like, I guess I mentioned Dinwiddie, but I can't imagine that would actually happen. Like, anybody else out there?
I mean, to me, the best possible trade would be dealing Thad Young for Monte Morris. Now, is that trade still on the table? Because I believe Millsap returned to Denver, right? They did.
Yeah, and I think the Nuggets want to extend Morris.
Now they want to extend Morris? Okay.
Yeah.
Because someone like Morris would really be perfect.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, I threw that out there to Stefan Noh. See what he thought, and he said his immediate response was that would be the best Bulls trade in 16 years since Eddie Curry. So yeah, like, I would love to see some sort of deal like that where they can actually get like a legitimate table setter. Like Monte Morris would be so perfect because he's young. And I think the presence of a guy like that would help you evaluate Markkanen and Carter moving forward, just having a really skilled floor general to lead the show, right? Take the ball out of Zach's hands, put him in a better role. I would love Monte Morris if they could somehow do that. And I'm already thinking, like, I know Denver wanted LaVine. Maybe we trade LaVine for Monte Morris at this point. Like, have them throw in some picks.
Yeah, see, we're gonna need some picks in there, too.
But. Well, we're going to need picks. We're going to need swaps. But, yeah, like, make a positive value deal for a team that is desperate. Like, I kind of think that that might be the Bulls' best road at this point. And if it's not, and if, you know, the other way they want to do this is to, like, go into free agency next year and sign some guys, that's cool too, man. But my evaluation of the Garpax young core is that they just don't have enough juice. They don't have enough upside. And you're going to have to shake it up. And it doesn't – like, I know that Karnišovas and Eversley were like, we view this as, like, a quick turnaround. They said that, right, when they took over?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Why, though? Like, I don't really understand that. Like, all you should be worrying about is improving the talent base of the team or the asset base of the team. And that has to be done significantly to make any sort of headway on the progression of the team. So not like minor moves, like another offseason like Satoransky and Thad Young, which, full disclosure, I loved when they did that last year. Obviously, I was wrong about it, but like, you know, moves around the edges like that, that's not really going to be enough to move the needle. The Bulls need to get bold. The only reason why Karnišovas is here is because of that. So get Cornette out of here. Get that Young out of here. Give me some wings. I don't even care who they're looking for in a lot of ways. You know, you don't want to take on Wiggins in like a big deal like that. Like, there's some sort of contracts, long-term contracts you're going to want to avoid, but in general, this team badly needs either assets or talent.
I'm curious. I think one other name I was like, I wonder if like George Hill is gettable from the Thunder. He's obviously not exciting either. Like, and that's just another like okay veteran, not a great playmaker. He is a really good shooter though. And like, if you're just looking for another guard/wing, like George Hill is on the Thunder now after the four team trade with the Holiday trade. Like, maybe he could be flipped again to the Bulls. I don't know what they'd. What I would want to give up for somebody like George Hill, but I mean, they just need something there, like more at guard, something more, a better shooter, more dynamic playmaker, something like that. Because I mean, just in general, that something like that should help just like your young guys be better. Like, we're trying to improve the value of Lowry and Wendell. Well, getting like an actual competent point guard, or at least another competent, I guess they don't really have like a legitimate point guard. Like, I mean, Kobe White's not a point guard yet. He's more of a gunner. We know what Zach kind of is in that mold. Like, Satoransky is fine, but he's not really that good. So, like, getting an actual guy who can run an offense, run a high-level offense, because the Bulls have had one of the worst offenses in the NBA the last few years, would help probably the value of these young guys, which is what we want them to see if they're going to stay around. So, like, they need something like that in there. So, I don't know. I was looking at some other names. Like, would you trade for, like, Terry Rozier? Big contract, but like, yeah, like, would you do like Thad and like for Terry Rozier?
I don't want Rozier. Like, no, yeah, like, I mean, a key part of this is not doing a move just to do a move.
Yeah, for sure.
I like, you got to identify the type of guys you want to build with long term. Yeah. Someone like Monte Morris would be awesome, and someone like Terry Rozier is not someone who I would want.
I would assume Devontae Graham is not available. He's like in a super cheap deal. He broke out last year, but like, I would have to think someone from that Hornets backcourt is going to be traded. I don't think are they really going to go forward with LaMelo, Devontae, Terry Rozier, and Gordon Hayward there, like all now. I mean, maybe they will, because it's the Hornets and like they can kind of bide their time with what they with some of these guys there. I would have to imagine they trade somebody soon. Dude. So like, if you could get Devontae Graham, like, that'd be absolutely sick, but I can't imagine that they would actually do that.
That's a good one. Yeah, maybe we could trade Lowry for Devontae Graham. Like, maybe there's a way to do that mid-season or something.
I mean, that's done. Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah.
I know he didn't shoot that well. Like, he was only like 38%, I think, overall, but great. He really came to his own as a passer. He shot well from three, and I think he killed the Bulls in a few games last year.
He can basically only shoot pull-up threes. He can't really get to the basket. He's not a natural playmaker. He is a tough defender, though. Yeah, he's small. So he's someone who you probably don't want as, like, your engine. Like, he's not, like, a Monte Morris type of floor general. He's more of, like, a pull-up shooting threat. But even having a guy like that, I think, would be really beneficial. Now, I do think – I'm not, like, totally out on Markkanen. We've discussed Markkanen so much on this podcast over the last year. I'm not saying that, like, the Bulls have to get rid of him, but, you know, after you add Pat Williams and you sort of look at, you know, how the team can be constructed going forward, I definitely think that Lowry's place on the team should be the shakiest of anyone on the core, like, because he's up for an extension. It's going to be really hard to agree on a fair number for him. Like, a couple of years ago, it was like, oh, he's a max extension guy. Then it was like, well, he's probably going to get the LaVine deal, which is 4 for $80 million. And now it's like, well, he's not even worth the LaVine deal. So what kind of deal could you give him that would be fair for him? And my thing with Lowry is, like, you can't lose him for nothing. You gotta deal him for value back. So it might even be in their best interest to sign him and then just trade him a year or two from now. Like, this new Bulls front office, you can do trades, unlike Garpax. Make a good trade.
Yeah, I mean, if you get him for something cheap, for sure. But I have to imagine, like, he would bet on himself, I would think. I mean, maybe not. Maybe he wouldn't do that. But, like, after these few years, I'm not really sure, like, what he would even agree to at this point. Right. Even if the Bulls put something on the table for him. Like, I don't even know if they're going to do that. But, like, I guess would he agree to, like, 460 right now? I feel like that'd be very stupid on his part. You'd think you'd want to bet on yourself more than that.
Right. But 460, you know, maybe after the year the Bulls signed him to that and then try to trade him. I don't know.
I mean, I wouldn't hate that. I do not want to commit. I would prefer not to commit anything right now. Like, I guess if he has another year like last year, I guess I don't even know if I would sign him at all. But, like, you would hope he's going to be at least a little better. And then if he at least improves a bit, like, you gave him 460 or 470, and then maybe you do trade him. I mean, there is value in just, like, keeping him around and then using him as a trade piece instead of letting him walk for nothing. Like, I'm curious to see what the Kings do. Like, the Kings have to make a decision by tonight. So by the time this goes up, they'll have made their decision. But with Bogdanovich, like, I feel like it would make sense for them to just keep him and then maybe trade him later, as opposed to just losing him to the Hawks for nothing. Like, it's not that big of a deal. It's whatever, $18 million a year, I think. It's like, teams like this are just like, I feel like it's bad business to just let them walk totally.
Yeah.
So, like, there definitely isn't some type of rationale for just keeping a guy on a deal. Because we see guys, I mean, we talk about there's all these bad contracts signed, and these guys end up getting traded anyways, and deals like that aren't even that bad. Like, there are really, like, no untradeable deals. Guys get moved all the time. Obviously, you don't want to, like, really overpay for a guy, but, like, if you paid Lowry $460, $470 next offseason, like, that wouldn't be that bad, as long as he, like, didn't take, like, a huge step back.
Yeah, I don't think that they should agree to an early extension with Lowry either, just to be clear. But my main point, though, is that, like, the current core in place is not going to mature into something that's super worthwhile, and the clock is ticking. So I'm not pissed that the Bulls haven't made any deals yet, but they're going to have to make some hard decisions soon, and that's the only reason why Karnišovas has the job, because the last front office couldn't make those hard decisions. And so that's kind of where they are right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's move off Bulls free agency. Let's talk about, I think you wanted to talk a bit more about Patrick Williams.
Yeah.
So I will let you have the floor.
Well, no, let's just talk about it. I don't need the floor. I don't have anything prepared. I just want to have a conversation. I'm loving the Patrick Williams pick more and more. And I think that, like, you know, I think I said that there, when they drafted him, I haven't listened to the recording of our podcast, but I believe what I said is that I did not expect him to be a high volume offensive player, but I thought that despite being, or a high volume scorer, I should say, but despite being sort of a low volume scorer, he could still be a really impactful player just because of the versatility he gives you in terms of his lineups. And potentially he's a guy who impacts the game without needing the ball, right? Just by, like, hitting spot ups, closing out, providing some supplemental rim protection, giving you some lineup flexibility where now, like, you know, Markkanen's a guy who, you know, most teams, I think, in today's NBA would see him as a five. The Bulls have never played him really at the five very much since he's been drafted here because they haven't had the type of four who could play next to him. So I would like to look up the Markkanen and Thad Young lineups when they were at the 5 and the 4 last year. I don't have those numbers in front of me, but if someone wants to look that up and tweet that at me when they didn't have another big man on the floor, because I know that sometimes Thad Young was playing the 3 last year. So in lineups where Markkanen was at the 5, Thad was at the 4, I'd be interested in those numbers.
Let me, here, if you just keep talking, I'll look
cool,
this
yeah,
up.
Look that up. Well, and then, going, yeah. You know, I think that Pat's skill set could potentially unlock some lineup combinations like that. And even if it's not Markkanen, like what if it's Jokic a couple of years from now, right? Like Jokic is going to be a free agent. Karnišovas has ties to him. I think this is in 2023, maybe.
Oh, man. 2023 plan, baby. Let's do it.
2023 plan, baby. Let's get Jokic. But Jokic. I'm just saying, like, having a four with rim protection abilities, meaning, like, when Pat Williams goes to wall up at the rim defensively, you cannot blow through him because he is so big and so strong in terms of his build that he's going to be able to absorb the contact most of the time. So you're not going to be able to, like, power through him. He's not really long, but I was talking to P.D. Webb, who we had on this podcast for a Killian Hayes episode. He loves Pat Williams, too. Go read P.D.'s work. He's at Above the Break 3, numeral 3 on Twitter. He wrote a great Pat Williams piece. And he was saying that he thinks Pat Williams' wingspan is 7'1 or 7'2, according to the Florida State people, when the most recent actual measurement we have is 6'11. I personally feel like that would be a really big difference. If he's got like a 7'1 or 7'2 wingspan, that would give him a little more ability, I think, to defend the rim at a high level. So that was sort of my initial take on Pat Williams. What I don't think I realized in my initial watching of Pat Williams, and I actually did watch quite a bit of Florida State because, you know, covering the draft, I loved Vassell too. Vassell was one of my favorite
players really good.
In this draft. Pat Williams didn't start, but they were on the best team in the ACC in Florida State. They mostly had a veteran roster. Vassell didn't start as a freshman either, I don't believe. And as a sophomore, he became a lottery pick. So I think, you know, they thought Pat was going to follow that sort of trajectory, and then Pat ends up turning one and done when he would have been the featured guy this upcoming year and what's going to be another really big, good, you know, Florida State team deep. And so I don't think I realized that Pat actually does have some sneaky offensive upside on the ball. And that is sort of what's been exciting me lately. And I think the Bulls sort of owe it to themselves to tap into that on the ball skill. Now, the first thing I'll say is, and Brian Schroeder at Cosmos on Twitter has mentioned this a few times. It's also just pretty obvious if you watch Florida State. They've never really had, like, a dribble creator, and they don't really let their guys freelance in terms of their dribbling abilities. So Pat Williams didn't get a ton of isolation offensive opportunities. I mean, he didn't even start, so this isn't surprising, right? That they weren't letting the youngest guy on the team cook with the ball in his hands when they play in the toughest conference. They're trying to win the ACC. They got a veteran team full of talented guys. They're the only team with 2 lottery picks. It makes sense that Pat Williams wasn't allowed to, like, ISO up and cook, right? But I do think he has a little bit of potential there in his game that is untapped. And that's sort of the fun thing about taking the youngest player or the second youngest player in the draft is that, like, we don't really know what he's going to be. Like, I see one outcome of Pat Williams where he's a low volume scorer, but is still like a pretty good draft pick at number 4 overall because, you know, he impacts the game defensively. He's still impacting the game offensively, gives you some versatility. That could still be a really good player, right? Even if he's not scoring a lot. But
absolutely,
maybe he can score a lot. Like, we don't really know that. There are some interesting indicators that would lead you to believe, well, perhaps he could be better with the ball in his hands than he got to show at Florida State. The first one is that in very low volume, only 9% of his possessions, I know I mentioned this on the previous episode, he was in the 90th percentile in terms of pick and roll ball handlers. So I think if you go look at the tape of his pick and roll ball handling reps, he threw some really nice live dribble passes. His pull-up shooting motion looks pretty fluid. So I think, like, that's something you can really tap into, right? Like, the Bulls owe it to themselves to tap into that. Let's see what he can do as a guy who, you know, you give him the ball on the wing and he's running an ISO or running a pick and roll, because his ball handling, of course, it needs to be improved, but it looks pretty solid. He definitely has some moments of really interesting reads as a passer, as a ball handler. I would say one thing that jumps out about him watching clips of him is that he just seems like generally a high feel player. And his coaches will say that too. His former teammates will say that. He seems like, well, for one, he seems like a Mitch Trubisky level sweetheart. He just seems like a really sweet kid who hopefully the entire city likes rooting for. I have spoken to Pat Williams once when he was in AAU on the Nike EYBL circuit, and he was like he was a really nice guy. But you know, I think that like maybe that's something that'll attract the fan base to him. But then also, I think that he's sort of like you can mold him into whatever he wants to be, I think. And
very unique, obviously.
Part of that is like, yeah, like maybe he ends up, I think I comped him to James Johnson on the last podcast, who had a pretty good career post Bulls. But you owe it to yourself to try to develop his on-ball abilities. And the more
they talked about it at that press conference. So I would assume they are. AK mentioned it after the draft. They mentioned the on-ball stuff, that he played point guard in high school and all that. So I would, it seems like that's why they like him, because they see that, they think that there is that stuff to untap. So I would hope that they give him that chance.
Yeah. And so, you know, like when you really like dive into his defense, like, you know, the biggest problem is that he's just not super quick. He got blown by a lot at Florida State. I don't really think he's going to get quicker. Like, there is this line of thought that perhaps he could sort of balance out his lower body muscle, where he has these tree trunks for thighs and not skinny calves, but like, you know, the muscle distribution could be better. Yeah. Right. So like, you know, the scenario of that happening and he gets quicker defensively and he turns into like a super stud defender, that almost seems less likely to me than him just like developing really good perimeter offensive skills. And when you talk about him playing the three, that should mean to me, your position is who you guard. So when I say Patrick Williams is a four, I mean, he's a four on defense, right? But you can have anyone handle the ball on offense, and you can have your power forward play as a quote wing, a big wing, a small forward, whatever, while still being a four. So on offense, yeah, try to tap into his perimeter skill. Try to see what he can become there, because he does have some really interesting flashes. I kind of think he might have more potential offensively than defensively at this point, which was not really the case on my initial read of him as a prospect when I was watching Florida State this year before the draft. Now I'm starting to see some avenues towards high upside offensive potential, whereas defensively, I think he's really solid. I think he'll be like a B+ defensively, but I don't really see all world potential because he's not super long and not super quick. Perhaps he makes up for some of that with high IQ. I think the high IQ also leads into his offensive potential. So that's just sort of my general takeaway on a week of Pat Williams. I'm really loving the Pat Williams pick. I really do. I am so much more excited about Patrick Williams than if they would have taken Denny or Halliburton. Yeah. And maybe Halliburton will be great because he found a perfect situation, I think, next to De'Aaron Fox as a lead ball handler in Sacramento. You know, maybe Denny will be really good. Maybe Okoro will be great, or Vassell. These are all, you know, names that I think most people would have expected to go ahead of Pat Williams. Killian Hayes as well. And I'm not saying that, like, I myself would have taken Killian over all those guys. But what I am saying is that it is a really exciting pick. It's a really fun pick. It gives you a lot of different outcomes. I think for him personally, there's an outcome where he becomes, you know, a low volume scorer, and there's an outcome where he possibly becomes a high volume scorer, and he could still be a good player on either of those avenues. So the general versatility and the general like team building options he unlocks, like, you know, I talked about his supplemental rim protection at the four. Like, maybe that allows you to play Lowry at the five. Maybe it allows you to play another really talented offensive five who's not Lowry Markkanen, who might suck in that place. Or maybe you go with Carter. And then maybe you have, like, a super sick defensive front of two a little bit undersized guys with Carter and Pat Williams. But they're just, like, high IQ. They're strong. They're tough. They're disciplined. You get an identity that way. So There's a lot still hanging up in the air about the Bulls. And obviously Patrick Williams, 19 years old, youngest American born player in the draft, he's going to have a long way to go before he's making a consistent impact. But a week later, I am really, really liking the pick. And I always liked the pick. I was never one of these people who was upset about it. But I'm just liking it more and more. The more I see him, the more I see him in these like pickup footages. Obviously there's caveats that come with that, but going back over the tape too, I think that it was a really fun pick, and I'm super excited to see what his career is going to be like.
I know Spencer Dinwiddie loves him, says he has no ceiling. So that's great. He's been playing. I think he's been part of those pickup games or whatever. So, I mean, that's fun. Yeah. I think we both said this, or I said this on right after they took him, like while I like it, maybe it seemed like they took him a bit high, you totally understand why they did it. And basically everything that you just talked about is why they did it, because of that extra kind of upside that is possibly there. Again, that'll be on them and him to develop it. Hopefully this new Bulls player development staff can get that out of him, because they've had some issues developing their players in recent years, it sure seems like. So hopefully they can unlock all that, because if it does, if he does hit and he hits his like higher possible outcomes, like he could be a very exciting, fun player and somebody that Bulls fans should really like. Going back, I did find, looking up at these lineup stats with Lowry and Thad, together they played, this is just like them together in general, it's like almost 300 minutes. Terrible offense. It was like a 99 offensive rating, minus four overall ratings. The defense was fine. A few lineups that they played in together a lot where they Lowry was the five and Thad was the four. Where is it? I had it right here. In 42 minutes, Thad, Lowry, Chris Dunn, Satoransky, Levine got absolutely worked on both ends. And then in 36 minutes, Kobe in place of Chris. Kobe, Thad, Levine, Dunn was much better. They almost kind of broke even. Again, these are really small sample sizes with Thad and Lowry playing in the front court. I mean, theoretically, it sounds like it could work, especially if you have decent guards around them. So I don't know. I think either way, one of those guys should go, and probably Thad Young if you're not going to find a Lowry trade, if you don't want to trade him yet. But they definitely need to make a move in the front court there, especially with Patrick Williams there now. Just to get Patrick Williams some minutes, even if we know rookies usually don't make that kind of big impact unless they're like super special guys. Like, I want to see Patrick Williams on the floor. And if you're going to get him on the floor, you need to clear out some of that logjam in the front court.
Yeah. I mean, you know, a year from now, are we talking about Lowry and Thad both being gone? Like,
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me.
Right. And those are sort of the moves that they're going to have to make. Like, they're going to have to make tough moves. So, you know, kind of a frustrating free agency for the Bulls. I think I'm not personally super frustrated by it, but I do know the clock is ticking. So I'm excited that what Karnishov has did by taking Patrick Williams. I think that Garpak's no way they make that pick. Right. Just like no chance. They take Patrick Williams.
Doesn't
so
seem
we'll
like
see if it, you know, if it works out for better or for worse. But I think, you know, the drafting for Garpax wasn't always terrible. It was, I mean, they had just so many errors and so many mistakes, but I think that like where Karnišovas can have the biggest improvement over the previous administration is by making trades. So let's see some trades, bro. Like, you know, you don't got to do them now. You got to do them by the deadline, I think.
Yeah. Within like the next calendar year, there's got to be some serious moves. Unless somehow like everything like goes well and like shockingly good outcomes for the Bulls. But even then, even if that happens, like then you consolidate some young guys into a superstar. I feel like if anything, like even if things do go well, you build up some of these guys' value up. Look for that next superstar that wants out, and you trade two of these guys in like a draft pick for a superstar, and you still have a couple of the young guys left. I mean, I feel like that's what should be. I think the outlook, and maybe that is what their plan is they want to build up these guys' values again, and then they want to flip them for a superstar. You still have some guys left over, but then if you bring in a legitimate star here, that'd be great. I don't know. We'll see. Like I said, there are multiple ways that they can approach this. This patient approach is fine for now, as you said, but we'll see how they go here. Before we totally wrap up here, is there anything else from around free agency that's like really shocked you? Like obviously that Gordon Hayward deal was massive. Michael Jordan giving him $120 million on that Hornets team. I know the Hornets are the Hornets. They're in Charlotte. Like you got to overpay for guys, but for that guy, that was kind of crazy. I mentioned the Jeremy Grant deal was pretty big, but I mean, they'll probably end up being fine, even if I think it's too much. The Lakers have obviously had a great offseason. They get Montrezl Harrell. They get Marc Gasol. They got Wesley Matthews. So, I mean, they're just reloading. They should be the clear favorite again. The Bucks got Bobby Portis. Kind of hilarious. They've DJ Augustine as well. So the Bucks made some decent moves after the whole Bogdanovich just complete fuck up. I feel like they're still in like the same boat though, where like they're going to rely on Drew Holiday to be much better than Bledsoe, and they need Giannis to hit jumpers and all that. We'll see about what Giannis, if he makes the decision now. I know Bam Adebayo just signed his max extension today, which a lot of people think that means Giannis is staying. I don't know. We'll see. as we wrap up here, Ricky, is there anything else that's really stood out from around the league in free agency so far? But most of the stuff is basically done at this point, unless there's other big trades.
Yeah. I mean, you just ran through a lot of it.
Yeah.
But like, I think the Lakers are the clear favorites next year. Yeah. It's hard for me to even see a team that comes close. And I already had this moment where I'm like, shit, is LeBron going to win more titles than Jordan? Like next year, if he gets that one, he's going to have five. And then like, there's already these rumors that they're going to both opt out and try to get Giannis. So, you know, just ridiculous. Like the Lakers tried to get Giannis. Like,
I know that'd be really annoying.
Yeah. So like LeBron's, the golden years of LeBron's career could really change the perception of his legacy, perhaps. I think that that's sort of an interesting storyline with the Lakers looking like they're the clear favorites again. I already talked about what the Hawks did. I thought that was really interesting. Kind of reminds me of what the Bulls did last year, but I don't think the Bulls signed anyone who was as good as Gallinari, and I don't think the Bulls have a player who's as good as Trae Young. So that's kind of interesting to see what they do. And yeah, I mean, there's been so much around the league. I'm excited about the Suns with CP3.
Yeah.
Suns made some good moves this offseason. I think that they have some potential to move way up the Western Conference standings. Yeah, quite a bit. There's been so much action in the opening days of free agency. The Bulls just haven't been in on any of it.
Yeah. I will also say it sucks ass that Klay Thompson is going to be out another season. That kind of nukes the Warriors. But shout out to Joe Lacob for using that trade exception to get Kelly Oubre Jr. paying up, even though that team is probably not going to be a title contender. They're going to be pay out the wazoo. At least they're like paying it back to Steph to try to keep them as competitive as possible. Again, sucks ass though for Klay Thompson. I feel like everybody loves Klay Thompson. He's kind of just a goofy guy. He's obviously one of the best shooters of all times, and he'll have missed two straight years in his prime now with this Achilles injury after his ACL. That just really fucking sucks for him and for the Warriors. It's kind of a bummer for their dynasty to kind of fizzle out like this, but maybe they'll be better than I think. I mean, as long as Steph is healthy, they still should be pretty good. Just in that Western Conference, which is obviously shaping up, especially with the Suns getting better. The Blazers have done some nice things. We didn't mention them yet. They got Melo back. They got Derek Jones Jr. Rodney Hood's back off his Achilles injury. They got Enes Kanter back, and then they'll have all. I think all their other guys are mostly healthy. I know Zach Collins is still recovering. I think he might miss some of the year, but I mean the Blazers should have a fun deep team. So I mean they'll be right there. Just the West is going to be a load, and then we just have to see what's going to happen with the Rockets if they trade Harden, if they go to camp with Harden and Russ, if they end up finding trades. Like, I feel like that's like the kind of Anthony Davis re-signing with the Lakers, but that's a foregone conclusion. Those are kind of like the last big orders of business here, it seems like, for this offseason. And then training camps open in like a week. Unreal. It's fucking crazy.
Any thoughts on Patrick Williams taking Luol Deng's number 9? He said he was going to
wear 14
originally. Now he's switching to 9.
I guess if he can have a Bulls career like Luol Deng, I'd be absolutely thrilled. I know Luol had his flaws. But he still goes down as what? Maybe one of the top 10 to 15 Bulls of all time? Patrick Williams can do that. I'd love it.
Hell yeah. For sure. Yeah. Hopefully Deng blesses that jersey selection, right? We want to be on Luol Deng's good side. But yeah, I'm excited about that. 14 was just a weird number to me, right? Like for a quarterback number, an Andy Dalton-ass number. Number 9 feels like he could be a stud wearing number 9. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, that's all for now here at Cash Considerations, Chicago Bulls podcast. It's Thanksgiving week. As we mentioned, free agency mostly wrapped up, but the Bulls could still make some moves. Hopefully they don't do anything over the next couple of days. We'd like to enjoy Thanksgiving, even though we're not really, during this time, this pandemic, not really doing much. Going to have Thanksgiving at home with the wife. You're going to Iowa to see your girlfriend, right? Is that just what you're doing for Thanksgiving?
Yeah, my parents canceled Thanksgiving. Smart move. Super. I'm thankful about that they didn't have everyone coming in. And my brother tested positive for COVID. He's not having any symptoms, but he lives in Arizona, and he was like going to come in to see the family. And it's like, bro, you had COVID, so I'm thankful that
stay away. Yeah, stay away, bro.
Yeah. So I'm thankful that most people hopefully are being smart for this. I'm glad my family was, at least. And yeah, I'm going to Iowa for a few days, see my girlfriend, going to hang out there. So we'll see if any Bulls news breaks. But we might have to do an emergency podcast if it does.
I know. Yeah, we'll see about that. Like I said, we'll be around. I'll be around. So, but I would hopefully they still be a little more patient than maybe next week. They get in on the action again, make some moves. But either way, yes, obviously here for cash considerations, that shout out to Blue Wire Podcast. Shout out to our sponsors, Indeed and Bet Online, and for go check out all the other great pods all across the Blue Wire Network. Obviously, with everything going on in free agency, we got tons of analysis, and we got football pods, other sports, a lot of other great pods, obviously with football season in full swing. So go check out any of those other pods if you want to. There's so many good pods in the Blue Wire Network. For us, obviously, you can rate and review us wherever you listen to your pods. We're on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, all those places. And let us, you know, where to find us on Twitter. Let us know how we're doing. Let us know if there's anything you want us to talk about. Let us know if there's anything we can do better. So we will talk to you guys next time. I'm not totally sure when that's going to be. If anything, it might be like a training camp preview if the Bulls don't do anything else. But if they make a big move or something in the near future here, we'll do an emergency podcast. But for this time, for Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast, Jason and Ricky, we'll talk to you guys next time, and happy Thanksgiving.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.